will bug me if I don't say this. I'm a football fan, and I've watched how much my club has suffered this year. We've had ownership changes. The men's team hasn't been brilliant. Chelsea fans, this is for you.
Welcome back to the View from the Bridge podcast. I am your host, Daniel Childs. Last week, we focused on the terrible men's season and how awful things have been over the past 9 months. But this week, things are a lot more positive regarding the women's side of things. Another WSL title, a fourth in a row, and an FA Cup triumph to speak of. Very glad to say the women's football writer for Reach, Beth Lindup, joins me now. How are you doing, Beth?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you very much for having me.
No worries. I think the first thing to speak of before starting this podcast in the intro, we just heard Emma Hayes quotes, particularly after the FA Cup final, where she was talking about Chelsea fans and how that victory was for Chelsea fans and how much the club has changed and suffered over the past year. Personally, as a Chelsea fan, I found that quite a telling moment and quite a brilliant thing to hear from someone at Chelsea to kind of admit that over the past year. Does that kind of reflect how humble and connected Emma Hayes is as a personality to the club?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's over this past sort of 11 years, she's sort of morphed into Mrs. Chelsea, really, hasn't she? She's been such an ever-present. And I think I heard an analogy last year, which perfectly sort of sums it up, is she's almost like the queen, and she's had this succession of prime ministers, aka different managers, and she's been sort of the one constant and steady presence, and very much gets what it means to be Chelsea and gets what it means to the club. You could see sort of she was visibly moved, you know, on that final day at Reading with this big bank of Chelsea fans sort of singing and you know, giving her all the thanks and praise, because you know, it has been a difficult season for her personally on and off the pitch. You know, it hasn't been the easiest season for Chelsea, but there was just a sense that this win, as much as it was a fourth successive title, it meant a little bit more to her, which was really nice to see.
I found it quite remarkable watching the final day against Reading, and I believe the commentators got it right. It was the first unchanged 11 of the campaign, which is just, I mean, it's just remarkable to think of a title winning team having that on the final day of the season. I mean, it kind of speaks, doesn't it, to the disruption of this season comparative to others.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in a lot of ways, really, with Chelsea, they're victims of their own success. You know, it's maybe a little bit like Manchester City on the men's side of things, not in terms of financial sort of rule breaking or anything like that, but in terms of they've become such this well-oiled winning machine over the years. And it almost feels like you want, from a neutral perspective, you want someone else to win, because you know, that it just makes things a little bit more exciting, doesn't it, when you've not got the same team winning. And therefore, I think Chelsea maybe don't get the credit that they deserve. And as you said, this season, they've been massively disrupted with injuries. You know, of course, other teams have too. Arsenal have probably had the worst of it. But Chelsea, you know, they've been without Frank Kirby, arguably the best player, one of the best players, most technically gifted players. You know, she's been out since February with a knee issue, sort of the business end of the campaign. You know, Emma Hayes had to do without Millie Bright, you know, best centre-back. Kadisha Buchanan's been out as well. Peniel Harder for much of the season hasn't been available. So it's been about adapting and you know, finding a feat and getting these sort of newer players or younger, less experienced players to sort of, you know, find their feet as well. And I think that's what Emma Hayes is so good at, is building and rebuilding winning teams. So, yeah, I think that stat about it being the first unchanged 11 is remarkable. But, yeah, a testament to what Emma's done this season.
Would you say this is, because of that, the most impressive of the run of four title wins?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the most difficult things, like Chelsea in a way make it look easy, but, you know, to keep winning is a very, very difficult thing. And to build a dynasty, which Emma Hayes has, you know, that's a real challenge. And when you consider all of the injuries that they've had, and also you consider Emma Hayes personally, what she's had to go through this season, obviously missed a number of games sort of in the autumn after undergoing an emergency hysterectomy. Obviously, she's been very open about her battle with endometriosis. So, you know, for her to have to deal with that off the pitch and then also the issues with the injuries as well, against the backdrop of a club, like as you said earlier, that have been sort of, have had a very difficult season, you know, and the mood at Chelsea maybe hasn't been particularly warm and settled for much of this campaign. So, there've been a number of things for Emma Hayes to contend with, and she's just sort of swatted it aside. So yeah, I'd probably say it is the most impressive title win of her time at Chelsea so far.
It also kind of reflects, doesn't it? Because, you know, she had to go through those awkward questions like Tuchel did at the time through the sanctions period last season, and how badly things have gone on the men's side, and the amount of disruption behind the scenes, and kind of a club feeling like it's lost its way. It does this kind of reveal, I guess, to the new ownership, because it kind of feels like from an outside perspective, they've kind of allowed the women's side, because it is so settled and has been so successful in recent years, to kind of just get on with things. And that has proven, that stability has proven to keep the club winning. I mean, isn't that a very telling lesson to the new ownership heading into this summer?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I mean, of course, you know, if you've got a manager for a while and things aren't going well, then you have to act. And you know, that's on the men's side of things, that's the Chelsea way, isn't it? And it's proven incredibly successful for the club over the years. You know, a bit of a conveyor belt of managers, but they've all been, you know, successful. And well, not all of them, but a lot of them have been successful. But yeah, I think the sort of the stability that Emma Hayes has brought has been really important. And I think as well, you know, this season they've got a record points tally. You know, it's one of those things that has maybe gone under the radar a little bit, but it's not been easy for them. It's not been sort of, you know, cruise control. We can do what we want and not, you know, they've absolutely, you know, smashed it out of the park again this season. So yeah, I think a large part of that is down to the winning culture and the, you know, the environment that Emma Hayes has created at Chelsea.
Yeah, it was interesting, like looking back now. I was there. I was lucky to be there for the final game of the previous season against Man United. You know, the famous Sam Kerr goal, and against Manchester United, you know, the club that was sort of rising, and you felt like they gave Chelsea a scare that day. And of course, a year later, they're up against them in the title race, or up against them in the FA Cup final. And I know Emma Hayes pushed back on this, didn't she, quite recently, in terms of this dominance, kind of it being boring. Well, you know, they've had to win the title on final days. It's not exactly like they've cruised to it by 10 points, and the season's been done halfway through.
Precisely, yeah, and it's almost like I think this Manchester United side have maybe pushed Chelsea to new levels, and that's what you want to see. You want to see title races going down to the wire, and it has done, as you said. It's not been a procession. It's not been easy. There was sort of a period a couple of months ago where it looked like United were potentially favourites because, you know, they were having things going for them. They were having a lot of last minute goals, and also because of the Champions League and the various cups that Chelsea have been in this season, they've almost been playing catch up for a lot of the campaign. They've almost always, until sort of a couple of weeks ago, had games in hand, which in one sense, you know, that I guess it's been in their own hands for longer than it's maybe appeared. However, you'd always rather have points on the board, wouldn't you? So, you know, United and Manchester City as well have had that advantage over Chelsea and Arsenal these last few months. They've had those extra points on the board, and it's been down to both Chelsea and Arsenal to claw their way back up. And I think I've always felt, not to sound too sort of like I'm predicting the future here, but I've always felt for this season that Chelsea were going to win it, because I just think, you know, when the margins are so fine, and obviously it's only 2 points in the end that you know has pipped Manchester United to the title, but when the margins are so fine, you've got to back people who've been there and done it. And you know, this Chelsea team is a team of winners now. They know what it takes to win. You know, it's not necessarily about putting in, you know, incredible swashbuckling performances every week. It's just about getting over the line, and they're very capable of doing that.
Kind of, because we will get to sort of the summer and the new recruits and some of those players leaving later on, to wrap up the podcast and sort of look into next season of what lies ahead for Chelsea to retain the title for a fifth time, which would be quite remarkable. I want to focus in on Guro Wrighton, you know, because I guess from an outsider perspective, everyone talks about Sam Kerr, and it's understandable because she's been an incredible player. She scores big goals consistently, but Wrighton, when you look at the numbers, when you look at what she has contributed, particularly on the final day of the season, this is someone who, you know, has been an important player for Emma Hayes, but it really feels like this season has been one where she's come to the fore as one of Chelsea's most influential attackers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right with Sam Kerr. Obviously, she's an exceptional talent and has been the difference on a number of occasions this season. But I think there were some sort of raised eyebrows a few weeks back when she was named sort of player of the year alongside Erling Haaland. You know, it almost felt a little bit like some of the people voting for that in the FWA had maybe thought, you know, whose name do we recognise the most? And they maybe took a punt on that, which is, you know, not downplaying Sam Kerr's achievements, because as I say, she's phenomenal. But yeah, Guro Wrighton for me is absolutely Chelsea's player of the season. I think sort of she's been described as a baby-faced assassin, and you know that's sort of how she looks. But she's, you know, a phenomenal talent. Just got her stats up here. You know, it's 9 goals, 11 assists in 21 matches. That's an incredible return. And I think she's a lot of Sam Kerr's success has been down to her and their partnership and the way that they've linked up. You know, if you, I think back to that the FA Cup semi-final away to Aston Villa, and it was such a tight game. And it was Giroud popping up at the near post and clipping it over to Sam for 1-0 Chelsea, and that got them through to the final. So, you know, they've been a lethal combination at times this season. And I think she maybe doesn't get, because she's not sort of an insanely prolific goal scorer, she doesn't maybe get the plaudits that she deserves. But yeah, an exceptional talent, and has been a real joy to watch this season.
Also, I think it's kind of that thing of we see this so often in football. If sometimes you aren't scoring those kind of historic goals, sometimes people maybe don't remember you as much or kind of don't appreciate you as much. And I think that's obviously something that Kerr, I think, has kind of added to her game this year, you know, particularly in the FA Cup final, you know, scoring those big goals where a lot of, I guess, outside attention as the women's game is growing, we'll look at Sam Kerr. But I completely agree with you. I think Wrighton's been so incredible, and it just shows that continued sort of evolution where, say, if a Kirby is out, you know, you've got another player to step up and link with a player like Kerr, which is so impressive. I do just want to bring up this thing, because I did write, because I know you were part of with the women's football writer team in terms of like looking through favorite moments of the season, and you picked out kind of one of the funnier moments of the season, or I guess you could argue a more serious point in terms of the professionalism of the game. Do you just want to go through that? Because I did want to bring that up in the podcast before we wrapped up.
My best moment of the season was Hot Dog Gate, as I branded it. And as you say, it's actually, you know, I feel like I'm that Frank Lampard meme at the moment, you know, where he laughs and then he goes serious. But it is actually quite a serious issue. Obviously, back in January, the WSL game between Liverpool and Chelsea at King's Meadow, it was abandoned after 6 7 minutes due to a frozen pitch, and it was shambolic, really. And it was sort of the epitome. It had come at a time when there'd been a number of postponements and late cancellations across the WSL, which really obviously undermined, you know, the professionalism of the league. And yeah, it was the game going to be on? Was it going to be off? The players were out training, they slipped over, and you know, one player, Shanice van der Sanden for Liverpool, actually picked up an injury. So it was a very serious situation. It should never have been allowed. That game should never have been allowed to be played. You know, it was, you know, really poor. And I think Emma Hayes has come out and said the club have learned a lot of lessons from that. However, at the time, she did sort of promise. Obviously, there were a lot of Liverpool fans who'd travelled all the way down to London, and a lot of Chelsea fans very disappointed too. So she said, you know, to make it all up to you, when the reverse fixture comes around, when the rearranged fixture comes around, sorry, I'll provide you all with a hot dog. And she actually then realised that the club don't sell hot dogs at King's Meadow. So she had to, you know, obviously liaise with the club, and they got in a hot dog van, especially. And yeah, courtesy of, I think it was the club who paid for it in the end, but they managed to get every single fan a free hot dog for the rearranged fixture in May, which was just a small token. And again, sort of, I guess, like a little, for people who don't know much about Emma Hayes, sort of epitomises her, really. And she's almost like the matriarch of the Women's Super League. I'm not sure she'd appreciate me saying that, but she, you know, she's someone who people always turn to for comment when there's a big issue affecting women's football and affecting the league. But yeah, it was a nice sort of way to end what was quite a disappointing saga, really.
It kind of speaks to, you know, that sense of community and connection that people have with the figures within the game. I feel that obviously on the men's side, that feels very distant, and particularly this season. And I think that, you know, lucky enough in very brief moment to be in the press conference with Emma Hayes after the last title win, you very much get that sense that this is someone who deeply cares. And despite being one of the best coaches in her profession, there's no kind of ego there. There's no sense that she regards herself in that way. You know, she's a very serious professional. She's someone that quite clearly works very hard and is at the top of her game. But I don't know, it's just one of those things that I think reflects so well on the women's game as it grows and gets better, that you wish at times at the elite men's level could be replicated, because that sense of community is just not there. And it's if we just talk about women's football, I think that's one of the strengths it has, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think sort of the way that sort of sums it up perfectly was after the title win, after the, you know, they won at Reading the other week, and I think Emma Hayes got asked about the game, and she said her response was, "It's gin o'clock," which, you know, can you imagine sort of a Premier League manager coming out and saying that? And I think, yeah, that there's a more sort of human aspect, I guess, that sort of broadly across the whole women's game. And, you know, in a sense, the Premier League can't be like that because of how the various demands that are on Premier League managers. But it is nice. It is this real sense of community. And, you know, what's been really nice for me this season, sat in various different press boxes, is seeing fan bases grow and seeing attendances up and seeing sort of dads and daughters go into games, or dads and little boys as well. You know, it's not just sort of little girls. You know, we speak a lot about it's great to see little girls having role models to look up to, which of course it is, but it's boys too, and that's the way that this game is going to grow. You know, it shouldn't be that this is just for women. It's for everybody to enjoy. And yeah, it is a real sort of, there's an inclusivity about it and a real sense of community, which is unique. And I think that's something that I really hope, you know, as much as the game does need to evolve in certain ways, I don't think we can be having, you know, players expected to stay behind for over an hour and sign autographs. That's just not sustainable. But, you know, as much as they've got those little things to iron out, I do hope that sense of family does sort of remain going forward as well.
I do just want to talk about the Champions League progress this year. A dramatic win against Lyon that didn't look like it was going to happen until the very last moments. I nearly walked out the stadium because I thought the referee was about to blow the whistle, and I stopped. And luckily, because the VAR check took so long for the penalty, which was, of course, an historic night for the team and for progression. Even though they lost to Barcelona, who, of course, have just recently won the Champions League, Emma Hayes was very strong, wasn't she, about the second leg at the Nou Camp in terms of how much the team, I guess, have progressed from that final in 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you watch those two performances, it was chalk and cheese, really. Obviously, you know, a bit of a mauling back in 2021, and a disastrous start. And I think, you know, the important thing was that Chelsea couldn't let that happen in the first leg, and they didn't. They kept the score down, which gave them a chance going away to Barcelona. And yeah, that game at the Nou Camp, I thought Chelsea did really, really well. I think, you know, Barcelona are the best side in Europe. They proved that in emphatic fashion at the weekend, coming from 2 goals down to beat Wolfsburg. And I do think, you know, with Chelsea, there's maybe a slight bit of an inferiority complex when they come up against Barcelona because of what happened in that final. And that's the next step for Chelsea and for Emma Hayes. You know, this is the holy grail for Chelsea. It's the trophy that they've never won. Obviously, Arsenal, the only English club to win the Champions League, and that was a long time ago when the game was very, very different. So yeah, it's difficult. And you know, I'm not sure what the magic ingredient is that's missing. But I think it's just about chipping away, and you know, they've made progress over the last 2 years. So now it's about making more progress, continuing to invest and recruit shrewdly as they have been doing. And I think they will get there. And I think if anyone can get Chelsea there, it's Emma Hayes.
You know, it's one of those things with a cup competition, and sorry to always refer to the men's side, but you know, it took the men a very long time to win the Champions League, and some of that at times is down to fortune, and some of that because it is a cup competition. You know, you face Lyon, you beat them, and then you have to face Barcelona. You maybe could have got a better draw, so at times you are kind of in the gods of kind of hoping that maybe at times you get a nicer draw, and especially as well having to, I always think of the Champions League, if you have to play at home first. That's always a very difficult thing to encounter. But it definitely felt like that Lyon victory, particularly given how difficult an evening it was, psychologically, do you think that penalty shootout win, although it wasn't the start of a miraculous run to the trophy, actually could propel them and be leaned upon in upcoming years when they get to those tough moments again, potentially against Barcelona?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've showed they can beat elite European sides, and they've shown that even, you know, against Barcelona, although they didn't progress, that they can compete with these great European sides as well. And I think, you know, Barcelona showed obviously the immense character to come back in that final against Wolfsburg. But in that first half, they showed that they can be got at. You know, Chelsea have the top players, as you know, as we've spoke about, Guerrero Wright and Sam Kerr, and all over the park as well. And it's just maybe, as you say, sometimes you just need that little bit of luck. You need that sort of one defensive error that you can pounce on. You need that one moment that can change a game, or a home draw in the second leg to get you over the line. And I think Chelsea will get that. But yeah, definitely, I think that win over Lyon was massive, and it has to be something that they draw upon next season, because it's proof that they can beat the very best.
Looking forward to next season. I mean, two players, two big characters who won't be at Chelsea, who have moved on. Peniel Harder, who of course had a really big influence in the FA Cup final after coming off the bench, and Magda Eriksson. Their departures, of course, were emotional. I guess there's one way to look at it in terms of their legacy and what they've contributed, but does it speak to the constant evolution that we've seen under Emma Hayes, that there is a sense that, right, we're losing two big figures here, but actually, as we're about to get to, there are going to be those to step in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one sort of facet of Emma Hayes's work at Chelsea that is so impressive, is her ability to sort of the succession planning, and knowing sort of when it's time for sentimentality, and also when it's time for somebody to move on. And I think Magda Eriksson has actually been exceptional in this second half of the season, deputising, in the absence of Millie Bright and Khadisha Buchanan. And she will be missed, and both of them will be missed for the quality, and also, as you say, for the character and their experience and what they bring to the dressing room. But the reason Chelsea keep winning is because they've not let this side stagnate. They've reinvented, and every couple of years, they bring in, one or two players. I mean, obviously, when it comes to the women's side of things, I'm completely neutral. But on the men's side of things, I'm a Liverpool fan, so I've watched my team. The past few seasons, they have stagnated. They haven't recruited shrewdly. They haven't bought, Gini Wijnaldum's leaving, let's bring in a player to replace him. Or, Dejan Lovren's leaving, we need another centre back. And they paid the price for that. And Chelsea, conversely, have done the exact opposite, and they've recruited really, really smartly. And that's been great to see, and that's a real sort of hallmark of their success. So I think, as much as Peniel and Magda will be massive misses, and I think, they also deserve enormous credit for what they've done off the pitch as well, sort of really advocating for the LGBT community, and being so open about that. They had a great conversation with Aspilicueta sort of earlier in the season, which is so important in terms of helping sort of those break those stigmas and taboos and stuff within the game. But yeah, they will be missed massively. That there's no doubt about that. But they've already made steps to bring in, replacements. So it'd be exciting to see how they go on as well.
Just focusing on those replacements, I mean, in terms of, we were just speaking about the Champions League and kind of that experience you need to get over the line. I mean, bringing in a player from Lyon, that feels like quite a shrewd piece of business.
It does, yeah, and they're bringing in, sort of young players as well, but players that have experienced things. And I think that the nice thing is, yeah, they're bringing in top players, but they're equally bringing them into a side that, yes, one or two players are leaving, but the crux of this side, the core of this side, have experience of winning titles, have experience of playing in the Champions League. So it's almost not sort of like these new players are being thrown into the deep end. They're able to sort of maybe take a little bit of time to bed in. But yeah, some really exciting prospects coming in, as well, bringing in Nicky Everard, new goalkeeper as well, who'll have a bit of time to bed in. So yeah, it's an exciting time, I think, to be a Chelsea women's fan.
Also, I guess solidifying who they've already got in the squad with the recent announcements of contracts for both Lauren James and Marin Mjelde. I mean, Lauren James, just an outstanding talent, and I think that's one player you just referenced, sort of kind of bedding in slowly. That kind of feels like Lauren James a little bit, because maybe not the best first season at Chelsea, back at Chelsea, but this year particularly, and also on the international side, she has really started to come into her own and show that talent that everyone knows she has.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Lauren James, as you say, she's really had to bide her time, hasn't she? And even this season, I think she had an incredible first half to the season, as you say, and sort of lit up the pitch for the Lionesses at the Arnold Clark Cup earlier this year. And she's an exceptional talent. I think, I can't remember who it was who said it, but she's maybe since Kelly Smith, probably England's most technically gifted player, one of the most exciting players that England have had. So it'll be really exciting to see her progression over the coming years. But Emma Hayes, I think, is probably her biggest critic, but I mean that in the best possible way. I think, she was taken off in that game against Reading, and she's I think she actually said to Emma Hayes, "Why have you taken me off?" And then you see sort of later that evening they're singing karaoke together, and I think that's such an underrated ability as a manager, to be able to guide a young player and be harsh with them, for their own benefit, but then also be able to manage them and deal with their emotions. And that's what Emma Hayes is so good at. But yeah, Lauren James is an exceptional, exceptional talent. You know, one of those players that when she gets on the ball, you're just so excited and induces all these sort of gasps from the crowd with some of the stuff that she's able to do. But for her now, I guess it's about staying injury free and building on that and getting a little bit of consistency. And I'm sure sort of, you know, next season we'll maybe see her, you know, completing more 90 minutes and starting more games. But yeah, an exciting talent and really important for her to sign a new deal as well.
I guess just briefly looking forward away from Chelsea, obviously the World Cup this summer, several Chelsea players, unfortunately, some like Frank Kirby, not involved because of injury, and that is a real shame. I guess for some of those players away, I mean, of course, we focus on the England side, but obviously for Sam Kerr, this is going to be quite an emotional summer, you suspect, in terms of a home tournament and what she can achieve. I do just want to briefly touch on the dispute going on between the clubs and the international sides in terms of letting players go to the World Cup. I mean, can you walk through some of that? Because that, along with the broadcasting side of things, there are some awkward conversations and disputes going on before this landmark tournament.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's disappointing actually, and I think sort of across this whole year there's been sort of a little bit of a backdrop of turbulence for a number of women's teams. You know, we've seen at the moment a number of Spanish players, you know, Spain arguably have a squad filled with the most naturally gifted players, and they're not going to be going because of an ongoing dispute because of with their football federation over the manager. We've had, you know, pay disputes with Canada and things like that, so all of that has been going on. And then as you say, there's now this club versus country row, a number of clubs, you know, not going to release their players until a certain date. You know, clubs want countries wanting them to come sooner. So that's a little bit of a mess, but you know, it's understandable for both parties. Obviously, the countries want the players as soon as possible so they can get to work and get on into training camps and things like that. But we've seen this season, you know, Arsenal are the prime example. A number of international players have sustained really serious injuries, and there's a question mark over, is that to do with playing too many games or playing too many games in a condensed period of time? So obviously the clubs have a vested interest in protecting their players. So it'll be interesting to see how that all gets resolved. And then obviously, yeah, the broadcast dispute, I think it will be settled. I'm hoping it will be. You know, there've been sort of whisperings for a while that the BBC and ITV are both in, you know, pretty deep negotiations with FIFA about getting these broadcasting rights in the UK. And hopefully sort of that will get over the line and other European nations will follow suit as well. I know sort of a number of different sports ministers wrote to FIFA and to broadcasters last week to sort of say, you know, sort it out basically. And it's a shame because, you know, this is has the potential to be one of the best World Cups ever, you know, in terms of some of the talent we've got going, in terms of the interest and the crowds, and you know, it promises to be a really exciting spectacle. So it will be a real shame for any of these issues off the pitch, whether that be, you know, club versus country, or whether that be disputes between players and federations or broadcasters. You know, hopefully that won't affect what's going on the pitch.
Especially from an England perspective after last summer, you know, to think that that kind of momentum and interest could be halted. I know that obviously, in terms of time zones and time difference, that, you know, for broadcasters, that makes things, of course, slightly awkward. But you'd suspect, given getting to the semi-final in the 2019 World Cup and winning the Euros, like this is. It, you just hope that common sense will prevail. Like, it's in the best interest of everyone, for FIFA, for the players, and for the broadcasters. As I say, I mean, I'm just, I guess we focus on the England side of things and having it broadcast here, but it would feel like the whole game would be shooting itself in the foot at a time when that momentum has been growing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's as you say, it's difficult because, you know, last summer was so perfect because it was a home tournament and obviously England went all the way, and I think those two things maybe had a little bit of a part to play in it with each other as well. But you know, it is going to be different. It's going to be different time zones. It's not a home tournament. But I still think there'll be enormous interest in it, you know, in the UK and abroad. You know, we're hoping that the Lionesses are going to go deep into the tournament. I know obviously they've been hampered a little bit by injury in recent months, but you would still back them to get out of the group and, you know, hopefully advance to you know, go all the way, but you know, advance into those later stages. So it would be a real shame if that was to to sort of impact the broadcasting dispute as well. And yeah, it is a shame, and you do hope that common sense prevails, and I do think it will, certainly in this country. But yeah, it's a shame. It would be a shame if other European countries are missing out because broadcasters can't reach an agreement.
Just back to Chelsea for one final question, and I guess it's a difficult one to answer at this stage because we've just wrapped up one season. Man United were the biggest rivals this season. Who would you say, based on what you're seeing now, would you suggest is going to be the biggest obstacle for Emma Hayes' Chelsea title winning sort of machine to overcome next year?
I think Manchester United again, potentially. I think, this season it felt like it was the start of something. I wasn't at Reading. I was at the Liverpool United game that day, and I was sort of anticipating at the final whistle for the players to sort of be very downbeat, and we've missed out on the final day. And but it actually was quite a jubilant sort of hopeful atmosphere among the players. And you almost got the sense that this was the start of something for them, and if they can invest right, if they can bring in a couple of other top signings in the summer, if they can keep hold of Alessio Russo, or owner Badgley, who's obviously linked with Barcelona, they will be a real obstacle. Arsenal again, I think, will come stronger next season. They've had absolutely rotten luck with injuries. They've obviously been linked with a move for Alessio Russo as well, and they've got a couple of players leaving. So I think it will be between Manchester United and Arsenal, but I think United do feel like they're on the precipice of just taking off into a real sort of force. So if they can maintain that momentum from this season and recruit well in the summer, then I think they could be the biggest threat to Chelsea's crown. But it's Chelsea's to lose. I'm always going into a season back in Chelsea to win the WSL.
Yeah, hopefully they don't recruit too well, so Chelsea can keep that title for another season. Thank you so much, Beth, for joining me. Just before we wrap up, just give you a chance now to shout out where people can find your work on Reach in terms of covering the women's game heading into a massive summer.
Yep, so my Twitter handle is at Beth_Lindop, so most of my work you'll find on there. And we also have an incredible team of writers working across the country, working covering various different clubs. And I'll just make sure that I give the right Twitter handle before I say the name of our account. It's at Our Women's Football. So yeah, if you type in Reach Women's Football into Twitter, you should be able to find all of our work from all of our brilliant writers there. So yeah, but no, thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
No worries. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back next week focusing on Mauricio Pochettino from a Spurs point of view. That'll be very interesting. So thank you. Please do rate and review the podcast positively. It really does help out. And we will see you again very soon.